James Comey has been nominated to head the FBI, our next FBI director, it looks like. He was the deputy attorney general under George W. Bush. So naturally, Barack Obama would like to hire him. And he's a really interesting fellow. He's not going to be joining us today, but someone who may be able to give us quite a bit of insight into James Comey is going to be joining us. And she's going to be joining us presently. Colleen Raleigh was an FBI special agent and legal counsel for more than 20 years until retiring from the Bureau in 2004. Following 9/11, after blowing the whistle on failures at the FBI, which led up to those attacks, she testified to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee about endemic problems facing both the agency and the intelligence community. In 2002, she was one of three whistleblowers named Time Magazine's Persons of the Year. She's been outspoken in support of federal whistleblower legislation and also in her support for WikiLeaks, its founder, Julian Assange, Bradley Manning, and now NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, who her organization, the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity in Intelligence, announced on Monday will be honored with the group's annual Sam Adams Award for Truth-Telling. Raleigh was actually the first recipient of that award, if I have this right, back in 2002. The group, named after a CIA whistleblower during the Vietnam War, is comprised of mostly former senior national security officials who praised Snowden this week for his decision to reveal the extent of U.S. government electronic surveillance of people in the United States and around the world. She's also a longtime friend of the Brad blog. She's guest blogged several times for us over the years, but now she's even allowed to write op-eds at the New York Times every now and again. And she did so this week in regard to President Obama's nomination of James Comey and his Senate oversight hearings yesterday. Let's see. Do we have her there? Colleen, welcome to the Bradcast.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for that great introduction.
You know, it's always great to talk to you, Colleen. Last time I think we spoke on air, it was, if I recall, the winter of 2010, and I believe that you had just been arrested protesting at the White House along with other legendary whistleblowers like Dan Ellsberg and intelligence officers like CIA vet Ray McGovern. But you know what? It wasn't Snowden, believe it or not, that I wanted to made me want to talk to you today. It was the nomination and the remarkably unreported U.S. Senate confirmation hearings yesterday of James Comey as the next director of the FBI. Did you happen to notice, Colleen, before we get into the details, that this seems to have been picked up almost by no one? These hearings for the guy who's going to head the FBI for the next decade or so.
Yeah, I noticed that. Unfortunately, I think it's consistent with the whatever you want to call it. I remember Sybil Edmonds called it the boiling frog syndrome or this apathy. Culturally, mm-hmm. We've just gotten worse and worse. I think a lot of people have kind of given up, and they say, well, one more thing on top of another. What can I do about it? There's a lot of explanations, but I think our mainstream media, of course, thinks that, of course, this is a slam dunk confirmation. There's no controversy. They perceive that story of the hospital standoff in 2004, where Comey stood up to Bush as him being some kind of whistleblower. In the hearings, they called it speaking truth to power on the part of Comey.
Yeah.
And so that myth is out there, and I think that I'm trying. It's very difficult, but I've been trying to make calls to senators today, mm-hmm. and they actually put out an additional press release that there's 2 days left before the record closes in this confirmation. I think Leahy said it closes on Friday, and I was trying to urge some senators to ask more questions because they really did not do a very lengthy. I mean, a lot of them just made small talk. One of our senators, Klobuchar, just wasted her entire. She asked one question, and the rest of it was hobnobbing about how they had gone to law school together and his family sitting there, et cetera.
And she's actually your senator up there in Minnesota. You had written an op-ed this week in the New York Times, questions for the FBI nominee. And I want to go through some of these and find out which, if any of them, were answered. But let's do this, because you brought this up, this remarkable moment back in 2004 that James Comey came and testified about in 2007. And in The Bargain, I think, became a hero for a bunch of Democrats. It was a remarkable moment. Washington Post called it the most stunning testimony in the history of Congress. And it was pretty remarkable. Let me just give everybody a quick idea, and then we'll play a bit of tape from him. We'll get the good stuff here out of the way, Colleen, because I think you're right. A lot of the media have said, oh, he's a good guy, everybody likes him. And then we'll go to the questions that we have about him that's sort of beyond this moment of heroism that he seems to have displayed in 2007. So, and correct me if I miss any points on this story, but in general, in 2004, as one of these programs, one of these secret programs was about to expire at midnight, it was one of these secret, presumably surveillance programs that was about to expire, James Comey, as Deputy Attorney General, he had become Acting Attorney General because John Ashcroft at the time was in the hospital with a severe case of pancreatitis and, you know, couldn't even talk, was under all kinds of drugs and everything else. And Andrew Card, the chief of staff for George W. Bush, and Alberto Gonzalez, his attorney at the time, really wanted a signature to continue this secret program, whatever it was, presumably a secret surveillance program. The AG had to sign off on it, and Comey had refused to do so. So in the middle of the night, Andrew Card and Gonzalez were going to speed over to the hospital in the middle of the night. George W. Bush himself reportedly actually called Mrs. Ashcroft and told her, these guys are on the way over. She ends up calling James Comey, says, hey, they're coming over here. They're going to strong arm them. He's in a limousine. He says, turn it around. Let's get to the hospital. There's this late night chase. He calls all his men at the FBI to come in and join him. They beat Card and Gonzalez there. And as Card and Gonzalez walk in, they make their case to John Ashcroft, and John Ashcroft says no. He sits up from his bed, as James Comey explains it, sits up from his bed and says, no, I'm not the acting attorney. I'm not the attorney general. He is. Let me play one short clip from the testimony in 2007 when James Comey was talking about that. Clip number one, G.
This was a very memorable period in my life, probably the most difficult time in my entire professional life, and that night was probably the most difficult night of my professional life, so it's not something I forget.
Okay. Were you present when Alberto Gonzalez visited Attorney General Ashcroft's bedside?
Yes.
And am I correct that the conduct of Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Card on that evening troubled you greatly?
Yes.
You rushed to the hospital that evening. Why?
I'm only hesitating because I need to explain why.
Please. I'll give you all the time you need, sir.
I've actually thought quite a bit over the last 3 years about how I would answer that question if it was ever asked, because I assumed that at some point I would have to testify about it.
And testify he did. And it was, in fact, quite riveting and quite heroic the way he stood up, frankly, to George W. Bush and threatened to resign if this program was renewed. And Colleen Rowley, as you point out, a lot of the Democrats, applaud him for that moment, as do I. That said, what is it that we now know about that moment? Do we know any more after yesterday's hearings with him? And then we could move beyond that moment to the times that he did not stand up to the George W. Bush administration.
Well, if you research the story, and I will say there's one source, there's a couple of sources to look at. I have not read Jack Goldsmith's book, but I think there's a good deal in that book about this episode. And mm-hmm. then the Inspector General Glenn Fine investigated these issues, and that's online. You can Google that and find that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not completely forthright, and they though that you still have this murky area, and this is why I came up with a bit of a working theory today and put out a press release about it, because it seems to explain everything I see out there in the research, and there are big missing portions when James Comey testifies. And when the story gets into the media, the reader and even I think the media were had a misperception, a couple of big misperceptions about his standing up against Bush and Cheney. Your factual description I think was correct. However, here's what's missing.
Right.
Okay. That heroic standoff in the hospital is later, just a few hours later, the very next morning. Comey is in the White House for a meeting and gets called in to talk to Bush directly. Okay, you don't know about, he was testifying 3 years later.
Right.
And he didn't go into that second meeting, which actually just occurs a few hours afterwards. Now, Comey has been completely reluctant. When he got asked in 2009 here by Walter Mondale, former Vice President Walter Mondale, again, I went to this speech here in 2009 where Walter Mondale's Public Interest Institute brought him in because everyone was thinking he's this brave hero who stood up to the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And when Mondale said, "Can you tell us about your meeting with Bush?" he clammed up, completely clammed up and refused. He gave the excuse that we can never talk about a meeting with the president because that will chill all future talks, etc. So that was a little weird, you know, a little bit suspicious. What we know is that Bush, without the legal signature certification of Ashcroft, that apparently was to sign off that this was legal, and actually the Department of Justice had determined that the monitoring was illegal. I think the premise was that it violated the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, this monitoring that had occurred right after 9/11.
And that's why the Attorney General, that's why John Ashcroft and Comey would not approve this program at that time, because they believed it was illegal.
Right. It had been right. They had determined, and I don't know how much Ashcroft had been filled in before this, but I think he even had been filled in too.
Right.
That it was illegal monitoring, and this certification, apparently it was a periodic certification,
right,
that Ashcroft had signed off on. There's a couple of things that you have to understand also, is that in that first period after 9/11, one main lawyer, John Yoo, had been put in charge of writing almost all of these new novel memos that created this new law, this brave new dark side law, law of war, that he was creating. He had one co-author, by the way, a Robert Delahunty, who's now a law professor here at St. Thomas Law School in Minnesota. Delahunty, I don't think, did the heavy lifting. I think he just signed on. But in any event, they've continued to co-author a bunch of things. They are strong believers in a theory called, what I call unbridled. That's my adjective. But it is unbridled, inherent executive power to override Congress and the courts. That is what they live and breathe, Delahunty and you.
And they basically make that argument, as I understand it, based on the Constitution's commander-in-chief power. Commander-in-chief power. He's the commander-in-chief.
Right.
He can do whatever he wants when it comes to the armed forces, when it comes
to
keeping us safe, under just the Constitution alone, never mind the laws. It's sort of Richard Nixon's, when the president does it, it's not illegal sort of a thing.
Yeah, I also had this wonderful opportunity a few years ago to listen to John Yoo when Delahunty brought him in here for a speech, and this is exactly it's breathtaking, this theory that he has, and of course in the meantime a lot of his theory has been repudiated. But in 2004, he would have been the author or the prime legal person behind whatever a system they had come up with this legal certification where Ashcroft was signing off on. And so what happened, and also the other thing that happened with John Yoo that Comey refers to obliquely several times, is, and it might have been at the White House's insistence, or maybe Ashcroft did this, who knows, but they had compartmentalized John Yoo. And so John Yoo was not getting peer review of the other lawyers, nor of the agency counsel. He was kind of allowed to write these things on his own.
Right. And Comey, I think, eventually said, and I think he said even in his hearings yesterday, that he was actually moved by the, he was encouraged or impressed by those legal arguments. But he wasn't that night. He turned them down. They were making the argument that they had the constitutional power to do it. And yeah. And then they all threatened to quit, to resign.
Back up a second.
Yeah.
He was not impressed with Yu's arguments. No. What happened is Jack Goldsmith, who was friends with Comey, took over as head, and,
okay.
and apparently he got read in and was allowed to read some of John Yoo's stuff. He balked at it, and
okay.
he got Comey and others, eventually Mueller too, to say this is wrong. And I think it was based on the legal footing.
Okay, but he, but here's what I'm trying to get to, Colleen Rowley, because at his hearing yesterday, at his Senate confirmation hearing, James Comey essentially came in support of many of these programs. And actually, let me just read the ACLU had this statement when Comey was first nominated for the FBI head. They said Comey approved some of the worst abuses committed by the Bush administration. Specifically, the publicly available evidence indicates Comey signed off on enhanced interrogation techniques that constitute torture, including waterboarding. He also oversaw indefinite detention without charge or trial of an American citizen picked up in the U.S. and then held for years in a military brig. Although Comey, they say, despite tremendous pressure from the Bush White House, deserves credit for courageously stopping the reauthorization of a secret NSA program, he reportedly approved programs that struck at the very core of who we all are as Americans. And yesterday, Colleen, at his confirmation hearing, he seemed to admit that. He seemed to admit that, yes, waterboarding is torture, but I approved it anyway because I was impressed with the legal justification that was shown to him. Did
That's
I understand
exactly right.
that correctly?
No, and we're talking about two different issues, and that exactly
okay.
was his justification. Bradbury, who was, again, under Goldsmith, and again, there was an inside battle here between attorneys in the Office of Legal Counsel, and they chose different legal rationales. Bradbury, according to Comey, he respected his legal reasoning that approved of all of the CIA torture tactics. And at the time, he said they were serious and responsible. Those were the words of Comey yesterday in responding. Well, I thought Bradbury's legal advice to me that said torture was legal, that waterboarding and sleep deprivation, that these were responsible and serious memos. Now, he was contrasting with the prior memos of John Yoo. But this is different. When you said the ACLU's thing, they did not really talk much about this warrantless monitoring program. I think everything else is correct, but when it says he stopped the warrantless monitoring program, that I don't think is correct. Bush continued. Anyways, this meeting occurs. Bush did not concede anything. Bush continued the illegal monitoring without Ashcroft's signature. And what happened, and again, you've got to fill in the dots a little bit because Comey refuses to talk about this,
mm-hmm.
is that it looks like Goldsmith went back and said, well, I can't do it based on inherent executive power of John Yoo's theory, but I can point to the authorization for military force
right.
in Afghanistan. And I think that is when this AUMF now is the legal footing for warrantless monitoring.
So your impression then is that the program didn't change. It was only the legal reasoning, the legal authority
right.
for the program. You can't base it on the Constitution, the commander-in-chief
yep.
power in the Constitution, but the authorization to use military force, that
That's
essentially
right.
allows the president to do
That's
anything.
Right.
And that kind of makes sense if you look at his hearing yesterday and his responses, because he was very supportive of the U.S. surveillance state. He said that the super secret FISA court was, quote, anything but a rubber stamp, despite the fact that they almost never say no to any request, and despite the fact that they are a non-adversarial court, nobody comes in and presents the opposing side. So to call it anything but a rubber stamp, this guy supports these surveillance techniques. There was no indication, at least that I received, and maybe you did, Did you get any sense at all that he would like to revisit these surveillance programs that we are using, or is he fully in support, and he will continue to be fully in support if he's elected as head of the FBI?
Well, to their credit, the senators pressed him to read their 6,000-page report that the Senate Judiciary has about the lack of effectiveness of waterboarding and torture. And Dianne Feinstein was really good in pressing him, as well as a couple others, because it seems like Comey still thinks it's effective. He even said a couple of times, "Well, the effectiveness should not matter." Well, that's what they call a red herring. It's not effective. It's not effective. You don't have to say that the effectiveness does not matter in the legal or how we should see ourselves as Americans.
Well,
but they pressed him on that, and they also pressed him on some of the legislative revisions to the NSA's current warrantless monitoring. And he said he would consider those, and he would have an open mind.
Well, Colleen,
I
hope he does too. But he was asked by the committee chair, Patrick Leahy, who asked him directly, "Do you agree that waterboarding is torture and is illegal?" He replied, "Yes." Now, my question for you, Colleen, you were an FBI special agent with the Bureau for 24 years, if I have my numbers correct. You were lauded as 2002 Time Magazine Person of the Year for your work, for your whistleblowing at the FBI. If you came across a crime, something that you acknowledged to be illegal as an FBI official, would you be able to say, "Well, that happened some time ago, so we're going to look forward, not back"? I mean, if Comey believes that torture is illegal, and if he is adopted as the head of the FBI, isn't it his job to prosecute those people who carried out illegal torture?
That's right. And let me go a step further with torture being illegal. It's not. This is actually sacrosanct legal prohibition. They call it in Latin jus cogens. That it's in a tier, it's in a category all by itself. Comey was extremely disingenuous by having this flimsy excuse that the 1994 U.S. statute is vague and that these memos were strongly written and responsible, and therefore he couldn't have determined that torture was illegal back when he approved it. I'm telling you, if you joined the FBI and you went through the 15 weeks of training, you heard over and over and over how to interview people without even the smidgen of coercion, let alone physical abuse. I will say I would have to commend Al Franken from Minnesota, because he was the one senator. White House did pretty well too, but Al Franken read the actual description of sleep deprivation. People don't think of that as being this torture, because we all think of when we miss an hour of sleep or something. The sleep deprivation that Comey signed off on is your arms are shackled, you're standing up, your feet are shackled to the floor, you have a diaper on, you only have a couple of feet of movement, and you could be forced to stand there for 180 hours, which is 7.5 days. And when he read that, then he said, "Is that torture?" to Comey. And I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, that's a no-brainer. You don't have to be a law graduate to understand that jus cogens torture prohibition. Sadly enough, in all probability, the next FBI director will be someone who has signed off on the worst illegal act that you can possibly come up with, which is this torture.
In fact, Comey said in response to that, with these folks being kept from sleeping for 6.5 days, quote, "It's one of those things that led me to ask who we are as Americans." But he acknowledged that he approved a legal memo finding that the duration of sleep deprivation is perfectly legal. And now we're kind of rewarding this guy.
Yeah, he completely hedged on that with the statement about who we are as Americans. He was trying to distract, and he was trying to find some middle ground by bringing that up. Well, that has nothing to do with anything. It's, you know, this is so much not a thinking thing. torture is completely illegal. Waterboarding had been prosecuted before, and he also mentioned once that it was only the combination of the tactics that concerned him. It wasn't the individual.
Let me play one very short clip here from his 2007 testimony, because this is sort of the crux of the matter. We're talking about the top law enforcement official in the country, or at least under the Attorney General, the top official at the FBI. Here's what he said in 2007 when it comes to the question about legalities of the program that he was at the time trying to stop. You have that clip number two?
Just assume you thought something was wrong with how it was being operated or administered or overseen.
We had concerns as to our ability to certify its legality, and which was our obligation for the program to be renewed.
So their obligation is to confirm, authorize the legality of a program. And here he is saying, well, all of these things, I believe they were illegal. I believe they were torture. But, go ahead and confirm me anyway as FBI. I think it's quite troubling. And Colleen, before we move, I want to got just a few minutes left here, but I want to turn the page to Edward Snowden momentarily. But you wrote 15 questions in the New York Times 2 days ago for the FBI nominee. Did they ask the questions that you wanted to hear, and which, if you had to pick one or two that they didn't ask, would you still like to know about at this time?
Well, they did focus on the torture issue, and I think that one was asked and answered, at least a flimsy answer, but it was asked and answered. Most of the others that I have on here, the senators did not really probe well enough. One other key area that you mentioned at the start is this notion or belief in indefinite detention by labeling somebody an enemy combatant, that you can hold them without any kind of due process. No right to attorney, nothing. And Comey was the spokesperson for the Padilla case, and he went out and had a press conference, and he defended the holding of Padilla for 2 years without an attorney. I think the question that needs to be put to him, Senator Franken tried to ask him about it, and Comey's response was, well, it should be a rare case when we do this. I called Franken's office today because I didn't know if they knew that Comey is on record also saying that when we have a case where the evidence is lacking of a terrorist or a foreign country has secret information that they don't want to be made public, he thinks there should be a way to to quote unquote incapacitate that suspect without recourse to a criminal trial. And that was in this Walter Mondale thing that I went to in 2009. Extremely troubling for an FBI director to talk about avoiding criminal process when you don't have sufficient evidence, for heaven's sakes.
Colleen, after more than two decades at the Bureau, after watching the testimony yesterday, would you feel comfortable if you were still there, if you were still serving with the FBI, would you feel comfortable with James Comey leading your FBI?
Well, let's just hope that we have some whistleblowers, but they've chilled, or this is going to lead right into Edward Snowden.
Well done.
And actually, Comey was asked about whistleblowing, but that was a complete, what I'm trying to say is they never addressed the issues, because there's no whistleblower protection in the FBI or any of these other intelligence agencies. And so, yes, you have no choice if you do witness these, let's say you witness torture again, because this is only in a temporary executive order. If you were joining the FBI right now, there's a strong chance a new president will come along and say, it's not illegal, is it? James Comey, is it legal? You signed off before, will you sign off again? I mean, this is, I hate to say it, but depending upon what happens, this could easily transpire. Now, if you're one of the lowly people in the agencies that are witnessing this type of thing or expected to follow orders, what are you supposed to do? And I'm hoping that we do have more Edward Snowdens and Bradley Mannings and Thomas Drakes out there, But, you know, it's the rare courage. It's very difficult because you are in a really corrupted, bad system.
And it's interesting because James Comey and President Obama alike talk about, oh, we need a federal whistleblower statute. However, we need carve-outs for national security whistleblowers to not let them be whistleblowers. And isn't that the main point? Yeah. Isn't that the most important type of whistleblower that we actually need here?
Yeah, that's the, what did they say? The it swallows the exception. It's the, there's a phrase.
Yeah,
it's that swallows the rule.
Yeah, exactly. It's the carve out that kills the law in this case.
Yeah.
Colleen Rowley, just another minute or two here, but why did your organization, the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence, choose to give this year's Truth Teller Award to Edward Snowden? And what troubles you the most about both his disclosures and the aftermath of those disclosures since he came out a few weeks ago?
Well, you have to know the story of Sam Adams, a lowly CIA analyst who in the late 60s discovered that the high-level General Westmoreland was lying to the American public about the Vietnam War. He was essentially going out to the press trying to project victory and saying that the enemy troop strength was half of what it actually was. The Sam Adams had done research and found it was twice as much. So the aftermath, the Sam Adams did stay within he argued for a long time, and eventually when it was too late, he did go to 60 Minutes. But the thought is that the Vietnam War is twice as big, twice as many U.S. deaths, and heaven knows how many Vietnamese deaths, because we did not have a whistleblower at that time when it was known that Westmoreland was lying. So that's why, you know, this, you can't get a situation, and you can see this terrible drama playing out over and over and over in whistleblowing. I could go on all night about the cases I know where people are witnessing life and death matters. You know, our government now shrugs it all off as you got to stay in the chain of command and whatever, but in the meantime, Even if you would eventually find someone who would take your issue, the torture issue is like that, because eventually this guy in the Army took it all the way up to McCain. It took him 17 months in the chain of command to get up to McCain, and then McCain did pass a law that went back to the Army field manual that made torture illegal. But in the 17 months, guess how many people were tortured in that meantime? And so it's a terrible dilemma. Snowden, of course, people say he shouldn't have gone public. Well, of course, he had no option. There's no way that when the orders are from the highest levels, this warrantless monitoring has been going on essentially since right after 9/11, maybe even before 9/11, in different ways, different legal footings. It's gone through at least three different legal footings because, to be honest, it's completely illegal and wrong. And now Snowden is trying to tell people about this, especially people in foreign countries and all the people that never would have understood that they are being perceived as terrorist suspects. That's the whole point here, is that it's not focused on somebody that, you know, Bush would say, well, if we only monitor the phones of the terrorists, the American people won't care. That was a huge lie. So everybody says, yeah, I don't care if they're monitoring the phones of the terrorists. Bush called it the terrorist surveillance program. It wasn't called that before the New York Times revealed what was going on. So what most troubles me right now, though, about what's gone on, is that the polls, because the media has done such a great job now in vilifying Snowden, he's, you know, working with China as a spy, all these crazy stories. They're even doing this about Glenn Greenwald.
Yep.
And other journalists, Laura Poitras, they're doing it about journalists now. They're treating journalists as potential spies under the Espionage Act, co-conspirators. That's extremely troubling, and this is why. Freedom of the press, freedom of thought, freedom of speech. This warrantless monitoring, people think it's just privacy. Well, it is privacy, but it is a lot more than privacy. Our entire First Amendment is on the line with this warrantless monitoring, and primarily it's through the press, reporting to people, as Thomas Jefferson's theory was, that we would learn about things so that we could intelligently govern ourselves.
The Sam Adams Award notice for Edward Snowden quoted Thomas Paine in the cold winter of 1776. Quote, "These are the times that try men's souls," he said. "The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman." Colleen Rowley, 20-year FBI special agent, 2002 Time Magazine Person of the Year. You have my love and thanks for all of your work, all of your service to the country, both in the FBI and afterwards. Thank you so much for all you do, and I suspect we will be talking more in the near future.
And I hope the listeners out there will be sunshine, not sunshine patriots, and pick up their phone and call their senators tomorrow. There's still 2 days where this record is open. And please put your feedback in.
About James Comey and whether he should be confirmed, this guy who approved torture as the next head of our FBI. Thank you so much, Colleen. I hope to talk with you real soon.
Thank you.
This is your FBI. This is your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. To your FBI, you look for national security, and to the Equitable Society for financial security. These two great institutions are dedicated to the protection of you, your home, and your country.
All right, when we come back, much more broadcast straight ahead, including zombies and Desi Doyen with the Green News and much more. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast.